Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour with your host, Sam Leibowitz.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are here with us today. Another nippy little spring day. Still feels like winter. I think, sometimes I feel like the seasons are shifting and that, you know, winter is like starting later and ending later. And these last couple of winters here in New York City have been a bit rough. But it's sunny and we're happy. It's a Monday. It's the start of a new week. Lots of opportunities to start something new. So let's get started with our quotes of the day. I'm sure you've been anxiously awaiting since last Monday for our quotes from the universe and from Abraham. Let's see what they have in store for us today. From the universe. If everyone wanted the same thing, if everyone wanted whatever was super trendy and wildly popular, or even if everyone wanted a million-person army of followers who are inspired, it wouldn't change the fact that you could still have yours pronto. There is enough for everyone. And you do know the, quote, right people. Unlimited, the universe. Our universe chiding us into abundance today, I think. And let's see what Abraham has in store for us on this Monday. Many people focus upon unwanted things with no deliberate attention to the emotional guidance within them. And they try to compensate for their lackful thinking with physical action. And because of the misalignment of energy, they do not get results from their action. And so they try harder by offering more action, but still things do not improve. Let the air you breathe, abundance in all things is available. Like the air you breathe, abundance in all things is available to you. Your life will simply be as good as you allow it to be. Abraham. Interesting. Two quotes of the day, completely random, both talking about abundance. And it's interesting, and this is one of the things that Abraham really spends a lot of time on, and you know, I talk about it in my groups and in my coaching sessions, that, you know, we tend to think that we always have to take action, 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 action. And yes, while action is necessary and things don't get done unless there's some action taken, that action that comes from the incorrect place, action that has an energy behind it that's out of alignment with what it is you're really trying to create, will not produce the results we want. And that the more we take the time to line up our energies, line up our intentions, line up how we feel with what it is that we really want to create in our life, that is the secret sauce. That is the magic ingredient. That is what it takes to really bring to us the things we so desire in life. And that you can be taking all the action in the world, and if you're not in alignment, those actions are not going to be producing the results that you want. But a tiny bit of action that's done after we've lined up produces far more results. You know that when you're launching a satellite or a spaceship and you want to go to the moon, you spend a lot of energy, a lot of thrust to get out of the Earth's orbit. And once you're out of the Earth's orbit and you're in space and the gravitational forces are very small, it only takes a tiny, tiny, tiny push to send you millions of miles. And that tiny, tiny, tiny push is the action. But that huge amount of thrust to go from zero to, you know, T-minus, you know, 120 seconds, that's the effort we need to make in lining up our energies. So whether you want abundance in material things, in relationships, in love, in physical health, no matter what type of abundance you're looking for, it all comes from the same process. Lining up with how you feel, lining up with your internal energies first. And then from that good feeling place of alignment, then taking action. And then the action we take is joyful, is easy. You're in the flow. You don't need to effort as much because you feel so in alignment with what you're doing. But when you're not in alignment, it's like running in quicksand. It's like pushing against a wall. There's so much resistance there. So when you get that resistance, you know, it's time for me to work on alignment. Very interesting quote, especially considering the wonderful returning guest. It's been quite a while since we've had you here, Karen, hasn't
it? Yeah, last year, I believe, at this time. It's good to see you, Sam.
Yeah, it's
Thanks
good
for
to
this
see
opportunity
you too.
To talk with you.
You're welcome. So for those of you who didn't catch the newsletter, and if you didn't catch the newsletter, make sure our site, once it's back up, probably tomorrow, to sign up for our newsletter. Our guest today is Karen Scotto de Luzia. Karen is a somatic therapist, an educator and trainer. She is the founder of the SOAR method, which we talked about last time you were here.
That's right.
Which is a somatic-oriented autonomic nervous system repair approach. And she specializes in chronic shame relief, stress release, trauma resolution, early attachment repatterning, sexual and social addictions, tantric spirituality, and vibrant embodied living. She's also the author of several ebooks, including the most recent one, Alchemy of Shame Transformation, The Five-Step Journey to Healing Social Phobia, The Yin-Yang of Abandonment Recovery, and Wound and Essence, A Call and Response Approach to Transformation. And her sort of latest endeavor is helping people to lead a shame-free life and training other therapists and healers on how to facilitate shame resolution and cultivate acceptance, connection, belonging, worth, and well-being. Welcome back on the show.
Thanks, Sam. I think it was interesting that you actually had me on talking about alignment with that Abraham quote.
Yes.
Because what stood out for me in that quote was the part where you spoke about when you want something, you want to create something, you don't put your intention toward what you don't want.
Right.
And inherent in the Alchemy of Shame Transformation, which is an ebook that your listeners can contact me after the show and get a mm-hmm. free PDF copy of.
Wonderful.
Yeah, or go to my website, or either way. But in that model, we look at shame and we resolve shame, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll talk a little bit more how I look at shame. But one of the most important features of the model is to actually cultivate what we actually want to replace, the new neural pathways we actually want to create, which is self-worth, self-respect, mm-hmm. belonging, mm-hmm. connection, confidence, mm-hmm. those things. Because, you know, we have the processing that we do to remove or undo things, and then we have what we replace it with.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's okay to be aware. You know, we all live sort of in contrast, as Abraham likes to say, which is being aware of the things that we don't want, right? And the more we know what we don't want, the more we know what we want. And the key is just shifting that focus from what we don't want to focusing on what we do want. So I'd like to just talk a little bit, because last time you were here, we talked a lot about your SOAR method and about somatic experiencing. So maybe we could just give the audience just a quick, like, Reader's Digest condensed version about what somatic experiencing is. And then I'd like to talk about kind of what got you into the shame transformation work.
Yeah, somatic experiencing is a biophysiological approach to healing trauma. Mm-hmm. And Peter Levine, who's one of my mentors, is the one who developed that approach some 30 right. years ago. He's a pioneer of somatic therapy, basically. I studied that approach. I studied it with Peter. Mm-hmm. I do personal work with Peter myself for some of my old traumas.
Right.
And then over time, I started blending in other aspects through that work, but other mm-hmm. aspects more spiritual aspects of it, a cognitive piece to it, just kind of looking to see how to address many levels, mind, body, spirit. One of the things that I've been noticing and I've seen is that when we work on what I call unshaming, that's a term that I'm coining, which is the undoing of shame. And when we work on the unshaming work, we're able to really lift out a lot of chronic core issues. And I'll give a little crash course at some point when we're talking a little later on about how I see shame, because it's a more neurological and social mammal function. But I think the important piece there is just that when you can get to the very core of it and you unbind and unwind the shame, so many things like relationship and money and sexual distresses and work distresses and things that are really at the very core of worth, belonging, feeling of respect, all of that really shifts and transforms quickly. So that's one of the reasons that I'm really put together the model and I'm really teaching that.
Right. So with somatic experiencing, it's a very body-centered sort of form of therapy.
Yeah, so that's true. I'm a somatic therapist, so I come out of that lineage.
Right.
So all of my work, so I wouldn't say that I'm doing somatic experiencing work at this point.
Right.
My method, and then this is my model. But all of that work uses the body as a beginning, and it's called a bottom up. So instead of using the cognitive mind, which we do when we sort of talk through narrative and keep ingraining that sort of narrative in our neurological circuits, we actually use the body to then form and shift things. So then the beliefs, the thinking, the behaviors, all of that shifts. So it's kind of what's a bottom-up approach.
But the reason why I wanted to kind of just make sure to highlight this for our audience, make sure they get it, is because our body kind of holds everything. Like our body remembers everything, even though we don't think it does. So even something like shame is not just stored sort of in the mind cognitively, but it's stored in the body as well.
Yeah, it's not really even stored in the mind, actually. We can talk a little about that. But yeah, I mean, many, many people feel that the body is the subconscious or the unconscious self, is the body. And movement is the free expression of the subconscious. So I mean, sometimes when you watch children, you know, there's also voice and vocalizing and everything that goes with it, but you can see how there's, like, you know, natural sort of circles and spirals and jumps and dances. So you can see that there's that sort of uninhibited self that's at play.
Gotcha Okay, great. Yeah, so it's time for us to take our first commercial break. When we come back, I just want to kind of get into what brought about this new focus on shame, which is relatively new for you, and then we'll really dive into the work about the importance of shame and why you felt so called to kind of pursue this direction, okay?
Great.
Wonderful. So, everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we will be back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
What are the latest travel trends? How can travel be a part of your overall health and wellness plan? This is William Paris, lifestyle travel consultant and your host on Travel and Wellness Today. Join me on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time for travel chat, travel tips, and travel news updates. That's on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
talkingalternative.com.
The more I understand about the human race, the less I comprehend about our purpose and place. And maybe if there was a clearer line, the curiosity would satisfy. Time-based prophecies that kept me from living in the moment. I am struggling to trust the divinity of all the gods and what the hell they have planned for us.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. And my guest this hour is Karen Scotto DeLuzia.
Perfect, yes.
Got it, good. So the work that you're doing now in shame transformation, this is a relatively new focus for you, isn't it?
No, it's not a new focus. My teaching it now is fairly new. It's been in the last year.
Right.
But the actual work itself has been forming for a long time. One of the impetus for the work has been that I often get clients that have been through a lot of therapy, a lot of talk therapy, or mm-hmm. a lot of other practitioners, mm-hmm. And they have symptoms that are getting worse or that they persist mm-hmm. and they can't get rid of. Mm-hmm. And what I started realizing as I was working with people was there was a commonality around things like, I feel inadequate, mm-hmm. I don't have any energy, my muscles just feel completely weak, I don't like myself, I can't see myself doing this. I don't, people weren't often using the word shame, but I saw this sort of commonality. And when I started working with them as if they were in a shame state, which I'll talk a little bit about the neurobiology of shame and what that state is like through the body. And then, as I said, from the body, then, it goes into the cognitive realms and action and behavior. I kept seeing a persistent shift, persistent change for people. Okay. And I started teaching this, doing some webinars, and I got an amazing response from therapists and healing professionals asking me to teach this.
Oh, really?
The model has a 10 milestones to it so that shame can be slippery, and it kind of helps people guide clients so that they're continuously going in an up spiral rather than a down spiral and circling through a redundant loop. So it's a very powerful, powerful model.
Okay. So, well, let me ask you just a question around shame. You know, shame is one of those things that's employed in society so much, yet it can be so damaging. Why is it so pervasive?
Well, I think in order for me to answer this, I just need to give you and maybe the readers a very quick crash course in the way I see shame, because I see it really differently than a lot of people.
So let's define our terms. What is shame?
Yeah. So I look at shame from this neurobiological perspective as a training program. It's a profound tool and a training program for all mammals. So I look at it through a mammalian lens, not just a human lens. Okay. And if you have dogs or cats or animal companions, you've probably all seen your animal companion in a shame state, right? With kind of like the head lowered down, the eyes pointed down, maybe the shoulders rounded. When I say that, it sounds familiar.
Yeah.
So it's a tool that's used to train young mammals. Or anyone in the herd, the tribe, but usually the young ones, about what behaviors are acceptable and non-acceptable in terms of keeping the tribe or the group safe.
Okay.
So you don't want a young mammal or even a young human making some noise or doing something that's going to call the predator.
Right. Okay.
So we're hardwired to react to shame. It's supposed to be something that's temporary, and basically it's supposed to, in our neurobiological circuitry, very excruciating. It's supposed to be like a frozen state where you stop, you halt, your autonomic nervous system responds without being able to think very well, move very well, and then there's that posture, right? Mm. Sometimes we put humans put their hands over their face, or and the impulse there, the physiological impulse, is to become small, contracted, hidden, maybe even invisible.
Right.
And that's supposed to be temporary. Where it gets tricky, and it gets tricky for us humans, and it is manipulated by parents in terms of parenting and sometimes religions and groups and so on, sort of manipulating that experience. But where it gets tricky is that the young human or the young person cannot really distinguish well for themselves between the action, the behavior. I pulled my sister's hair and I'm being told not to pull her hair. Can't distinguish that the behavior is unacceptable. Not I am unacceptable or the behavior is quote unquote bad, but I am not inherently bad. So what actually works well is not to just let your young children do whatever they want, but you give them that information, you know, don't pull or stop pulling your sister's hair right now. I know you didn't mean to hurt her, you know, and you know, maybe giving the child a hug afterwards or just acknowledging that you still love that child. Or you know that they're good. Right. That behavior must stop. Then there's a learning there and there's a shame resilience. Right. I can have the experience of being shamed, but I can also move out of it and learn and still be a part of my tribe, not isolated.
Right.
So, you know, that's kind of...
To kind of separate the difference between our actions and our identities, that we have a tendency to kind of take things in that, oh, if I did something wrong, I must be wrong as an individual, as opposed to splitting and say, okay, it's that action was not necessarily something good, but that doesn't mean I'm a bad person.
Exactly. And also, just to use that same example, the young child may not be being mean. It may be a four-year-old child that's expressing curiosity and empowerment. Wow, look how strong I am that I can pull this hair. And there may be a little bit of, you know, put down on the sister or, you know, she came later and he's jealous of the mom's attention or, you know, something. Right. But basically that there is a curiosity in that impulse. So all of that, the expression, the aliveness, the curiosity, the emotional fear or upset, all of that gets frozen. And this is really important in the shame state. And if it doesn't get repaired and there's a conditioned shaming over and over again, then we create chronic shame or toxic shame. Right. And people grow up with identities about, you know, I'm bad, I'm inadequate, or very inhibited lives because they feel that they can't really express themselves.
Right. You know? And so I take it because you got such a strong response when you started to teach this to practitioners and working with clients that this is a fairly pervasive issue in society of sort of this creating of taking on a shamed identity as opposed to, you know, just knowing like that action is shameful.
It's so pervasive. It really is so pervasive. I mean, if we think about all religions, right? All religions sort of come from this place of telling us that we're born with shame on our back.
Right.
And in reality, we're born to react to the shaming, right? As I said, as if you would tell your dog or something, no, you know, not, don't eat my slipper. And then it kind of puts its head down. But then afterward, you know, you kind of pet the dog and so on, and it's all okay.
Right.
So there is even collectively, even in the societal collective body, there's this complete confusion about our goodness and our empowerment and our ability to be creative and vital versus, you know, with some accountability versus just that we are powerless or, you know, that kind of thing.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay, so now we know we have shame. It's in our memories. It's in our bodies. How did you start to unravel it with your work?
Yeah, well, it's through the body, as I said, because I'm a somatic practitioner, and there's a few different ways that we can, and it's if you go to the book or so, and you'll see it's very nuanced, and there's a lot of different components to it. So this is a real oversimplification, but going through the body is a really, really wonderful way to quickly shift. To quickly shift the state. And if I don't know if you feel like we have 2 minutes right now to do a quick
We have 2 minutes
exercise. So let's see if we can go through something really, really short, really, really small for you and the listeners, and then I'll just start getting a tiny taste of, of what I'm talking about. So essentially, just allow yourself to bring up the memory of a slightly embarrassing time. And this could have been 20 years ago. This could have been 2 years ago, 2 minutes ago. And just kind of get a sense of how, and not the most shaming experience of your life, you know, but an embarrassing experience. And get a sense of how you feel about yourself. And then if you do a quick body scan and you kind of feel, you know, whether you can feel your feet or your stomach, your heart, your throat, you know, your shoulders, eyes, all that. Get a sense of what that feels like for a minute. And then allow yourself to bring up, just like if you were working on the computer and you just kind of like minused one screen and brought up another, allow yourself to bring up a memory of when you felt really connected to other people. You felt like you were really part of belonging and part of, you know, others, whether that was in an ongoing group or at a party or a brief encounter. And now feel the experience of how you feel about yourself. And the body scan again. The feet, the legs, the stomach, the heart, the chest, the shoulders, the eyes. And just kind of being with that and noticing what you notice. If there's anything that feels different, if anything shifted.
It feels very different. I mean, one feels much more expansive. The other one's contractive. You know, one feels more relaxed. The other feels tight.
And in terms of how one feels about oneself.
One feels disempowering and the other feels empowering.
Confident and, and So that was in a minute. I mean, that was probably less than 1 minute. And of course, there's a lot more to working with people who are chronic shame survivors than just that. But it's actually really, really easy to shift through physiology and through the body a lot of these patternings. And sometimes I use the navel as a very big exercise, which we're not going to get into right now because it takes more time. It's in the book. But these are some different different approaches. And then maybe we could talk about the new neural pathways, because that goes hand in hand. Again, what we're looking to shift and then what we're looking to replace.
Okay, wonderful. All right, well, why don't we take our commercial break now? And then when we come back, I'd actually like to just, we'll talk a little bit about it. If you're a practitioner, how do you identify that you're dealing with shame with somebody? And then as you say, okay, now we know this, what are we replacing it with?
Yes, great.
Beautiful. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. And of course, if you have your own questions around shame, feel free to call in. Our call-in number is 877-480-4120. Listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you on a path of consciousness or spirit? Is personal or spiritual empowerment important to you? I'm Sam Leibowitz, your conscious consultant, and I am here to answer your questions and bring you experts in all areas of life to raise your awareness and support you in your evolution. Tune in at my new time, Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern on www.talkradio.nyc. That's Mondays at 1 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at talkingalternative.com.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Today it became so clear. I know it's gonna be alright. I know it's gonna be alright today.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we're talking with Karen Scotto De Luzia today all about shame. So, as you mentioned, you know, a lot of your work, you actually train practitioners on how to deal with these issues. So if I'm a practitioner, I have someone kind of come to see me, how do I know if I'm dealing with a shame-related issue?
Yeah, so as we talked about the body posture a little bit earlier, that's definitely one giveaway, right? If someone, and that's not in one session, but it's something you'd see repeatedly, that someone's coming in to see you and their eyes are downcast. They're always sort of looking down at their feet. Their shoulders are kind of rounded. Maybe their legs are sort of splayed out or turned inward a little bit. So these are like sort of embodied postures of shame that you would see regularly. Other things would be if they're not exhibiting exactly that kind of physicality, they may be talking a lot, maybe not using the word shame, because often just self-identifying that can be very, very shaming or risky or difficult for people. So often people don't use the word shame. They may, you know, talk about this inner critic that's always there, this monkey mind that's always tearing them down, or how they feel very inadequate or like they're a failure all the time. Things like that, and also a lack of energy, because actually depression and shame have very, very similar neurobiological roots, and their states are very similar. Also addiction, usually a lot of the addiction work I do, chronic shaming tends to be at the base of a lot of addiction, because it's such an inner battle. These feelings of feeling so badly, people have no way to run away from it or cope with it. So they're trying to numb out from it. And trauma, usually trauma and shame.
Go hand in hand.
Well, you know, there's usually some level often of shame associated with trauma. So those things, for you know, for sure, you can pretty much count on. And then it would be really attuning with your client. I don't ever suggest that people say, do you have shame? Do you feel shame? Because it can that in of itself can be threatening or shaming to someone. But listening, looking at the body postures, listening to the patterns, and then really the key, because as I mentioned, we're social mammals. It's this function. It's a social function of halting and isolating the person, right? Isolating, putting them in a box of unacceptability. You know, you can't do this.
Go sit in the corner and wear the dunce cap.
Right. There you go. So basically the way we heal this and the way practitioners can heal this is through connection. And whether that's in the therapeutic alliance between, you know, yourself and myself that we're doing sessions, or in a group or community building. And I think because PTSD and trauma and addiction can go hand in hand with these things, sometimes the therapist is not the safest person, especially there's different attachment issues people have, you know, early sort of woundings. So bringing in the safety, whether that's the Dalai Lama for somebody, or Mother Mary, or a big redwood tree, or the ocean, or, you know, their animal companion, or their best friend, or, you know, looking to see where the safety and connection can be built from. And then eventually you build that.
So kind of bringing in this imagery as a resource for the individual.
Yeah, and I think it's not imagery. So I want to make a distinction here. It's embodied imagination, which is really different because an image is something that we see through, you know, the visual channel, but we don't necessarily have to feel it. We can see an image and it can stay detached and removed from us. But we can see an image and we can allow it to actually penetrate our field and actually feel it bodily and sensorially and even spiritually, you know, holistically.
Right.
And that's what's really, really needed to shift things. Mm. Just the way we did in that piece of work, whether you realize it or not, you were actually feeling that experience of the embarrassment or of the connection.
Right,
so that's really key, not just seeing.
Right. So you talk a lot about sort of physio education, that you know, because of your background in somatic experiencing, again, it's using the body to help you with dealing with these issues once they've sort of been come up or diagnosed.
Yeah. So when I talk about the physio education, that would be, let's say, we were doing a series of 5 sessions. Sometimes I do things in series of like 5 or 10 sessions.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be the first session.
Right.
So when you would be starting yourself to self-identify and say, you know, I'm kind of feeling embarrassed. You know, I'm kind of feeling like, you know, I have some shame around asking for money for a salary increase or, you know, this, that. Then that's when we can start talking about, well, you know, that makes sense. It's common. It's a human experience.
So you normalize it.
Well, normalizing, but then actually giving information about the social function of shame, that we are mammals and that we're meant to react to shame and to have the resiliency to overcome it. So you're now building your resiliency and your neural pathways for feeling more valuable, for feeling like you have more self-respect, worth, and that kind of thing. So that's where the physio education comes in. But it's not someone comes in and you don't go, hey, did you know we're social mammals and we have shit? You know, it's like, that's just, it's too much. It has to be the right timing for somebody to be able to start to go, oh, okay, so that's how I fit in. And then it gives that belonging that you're part of the human part of the species, and that this is something that you're not the only one that carries this.
And if I'm, let's say, just having a conversation with a friend, and I just kind of notice through the conversation that there's obviously some shame around something going on. Like, let's just say, like I have a friend maybe right now doesn't have his own place, right? So he's kind of bouncing around from a friend's couch to a friend's couch, you know, until he gets himself settled and stuff. And so there's a certain amount of shame with that. So just as an individual having a conversation, are the things I can do to kind of help him with that issue around shame?
Well, you know, some of that also was just a basis for friendship. What's acceptable in your agreement around friendship? You know, to what level, what depth, all of that.
Right.
So, but just let's say that, you know, you've got the kind of friendship where you kind of look to help each other out in these kinds of deep ways.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to counter shame, whether you're actually a practitioner or a friend or a parent, you know, is to keep that sense of complete acceptance. But this is not just a thought process like, oh yeah, I accept you, but really hold an energy and a belief of like, yeah, you're there's a reason, right? I'm sure that there's a reason why he's couch surfing right now.
Right.
Maybe he's making a transition or he had health problems or, you know, I don't know.
Right.
So just kind of holding that, you know, understanding that, yeah, I wouldn't be ashamed, or I don't think you have any, you know, reason to be ashamed. So that kind of like holding of that acceptance and that groundedness, because shame can be very ungrounding. Again, physically, we can feel like we're spinning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you want to have that ease of breath.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have that grounded posture.
Mm-hmm.
You want to have that acceptance. And you also want to hold the reality and the truth that this shifts.
Mm-hmm.
Just like right now when we shifted that little embarrassment,
right.
This too shall pass.
Yes.
It's meant to be a temporary state.
Right.
So I think those things are really helpful. And then beyond that, you're probably getting out of the scope of your practice as a friend.
Yes. I don't want to get too deep. But for, let's say, those people who are practitioners, you have, you call them your 10 milestones of shame transformation. Maybe we can just kind of briefly, you know, touch on them.
Well,
or some of them.
Yeah, I think that that's a little tricky because it builds on a lot. But there are three things that we could talk about for practitioners that I think that aren't the 10 milestones, but that are useful. And one is presence.
Okay.
Right. Because all of this work is, there's always a humanness. There's always a presence and a compassion that we hold. And yet that's not always enough in the face of a very strong down spiraling shame cycle.
Right.
So what are the qualities of presence that's needed? And the quality of that is this sense of acceptance. So if somebody was like thoroughly shamed about vocalizing or singing or something when they were very young, yeah, your client can be, you know, singing an opera and sounding like a weasel, and you're sitting there in enjoyment and in joy and in acceptance, not because they sound like a weasel, but the fact that their vital energy, their self-expression is coming into pure form, is coming back to them, is reclaiming. So there's that way in which we want to hold people in this way of not only witnessing, but celebrating the purity coming back and the separating the shame and all of, you know, that halting and that inhibition from the vitality or the energy, you know, and so on. I don't know if we need to take a break or if I should go through another one of these.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Another one would be joining. So often therapeutically, you know, we learn not to oppose people, you know, not to become enemies to them. And I'm certainly not saying that we should, but you don't want to join someone in a shame state. So if someone says, you know, because they're feeling contracted and they're feeling badly and they're saying, oh, I just feel so badly and I have no energy. And you don't want to say, oh, yeah, I know it's terrible. You feel badly and you have no energy.
Right.
You actually want to say, oh, really? You know, well, where do you feel energy, or what does motivate you, or what does make you feel good? You know, you want to encourage that outward movement away from the shame.
So kind of the difference between sympathy and empathy. So you don't really want to sympathize with people and say, oh, yeah, I know things are so awful, so horrible. But you can empathize with them and then say, yeah, I wonder what would it take to move around this or something like that.
Yeah, and start encouraging or mirroring the kind of the slow shift outward.
Right,
yeah, exactly, right, exactly.
Right. Gotcha. Okay, so believe it or not, it's time for us to take our last commercial break. When we come back, maybe perhaps you can give us an example of maybe someone you've worked with around, you know, some shame-related issue and kind of, you know, what it kind of looked like for you working with somebody to come through it. And then we'll, of course, give everyone the information on where your website is and how to get the PDF.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks.
Wonderful. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Have you ever decided to reinvent yourself? Are you navigating a new life's journey? Are you an aspiring artist that's looking for direction? This is Kevin Barbaro, and my new show, Coffee Talk 3.0, is your new best friend. Tune in live to hear successful professional artists and their inspiring real-life adventures Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, right here at TalkingAlternative.com.
What are the latest travel trends? How can travel be a part of your overall health and wellness plan? This is William Paris, lifestyle travel consultant and your host on Travel and Wellness Today. Join me on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time for travel chat, travel tips, and travel news updates. That's on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications?
Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Earth was still flat, and the clouds made of fire. The mountains stretched up to the sky, sometimes higher. Folks roamed the earth like big rolling cakes. They had two sets of arms, two sets of legs. They had two faces peering out of one giant head. Then they could watch all around them, and they talked while they were.
And welcome back. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and my guest this hour has been Karen Scotto de Lucia, talking all about her shame, how do we call it? Alchemy of Shame Transformation Method. So, Karen, I was wondering if maybe in this last segment you could maybe just, you know, highlight an example of someone you worked with this method and kind of, you know, how you approached it. Just to kind of give our audience just a little bit of an idea. You know, we don't have, an hour is not that much time to really educate people on it, but just give them a taste.
Yeah, sure. So let's call this client Sarah for, mm-hmm. for privacy. She was a middle-aged woman who came to me because she had very severe phobia. Mm-hmm. And that's now that I'm teaching this method, some more people will come to me to work on shame. Right. But most of the time, people would come to work on other things. And, right. you know, I'm very well known for phobias and different things. So she came to me, she had very severe phobias. And one of the first things we did in the first session or two was to balance her nervous system. Because mm-hmm. without a balanced nervous system, you can't really tackle big, right. big things, big emotional things, or you'll just start looping. You'll just start looping right. there, right. and it doesn't give the person any relief. So toward the end of the, I think it was the third session, she was in my office and we're working, and she started feeling like she wanted to run. So mm. I supported her her ankles, and she ran to this safe place, and she found a lot of relief, and then she kind of slumped over in this, kind of like we talked about, that shame posture. Mm-hmm. And from the navel, I do this navel exercise work that's also in the ebook. Mm-hmm. And I kind of guided her with this navel work. And as she was starting to come out of the shame posture, she sort of remembered that when she was very young, her older sister would drag her to bed, to her bed, to try to protect herself from this older brother that would come in and molest the older sister. Ooh. And so essentially there was this very shameful act that was happening mm. that even though she was two or three, mm. she knew that something, you know, it was shameful, it was bad, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and she couldn't escape. So there's a way in which she had taken on this projected shame that wasn't owned by the brother for the act, mm-hmm. and sort of this helplessness of the sister and then her own desire to escape, mm-hmm. you know, to escape it. So once we got to that place, she was able to process some of these very, very painful feelings and emotions mm. and sort of complete some of those, and then started to feel a sense of her own needs. Mm. Like, I have a need for protection. I have a need to have my own space. Mm. I have a need to say what I need, to say what I want. And even her relationship, the romantic partnership she was in, after about 3 months, she decided to switch out of that, and because oh. she felt that it was so not compatible with what she deeply needed and wanted. Oh. But all of that was being frozen and blocked oh. by the phobias, which were sitting on top of this experience oh. where she was just riddled with panic and shame over these, you know, experiences from her young life. So within 3 months, her phobias were pretty much out of the way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's a 3 months over how many sessions, would you say?
Weekly. So that's what, 12? Is that 12 sessions?
12. Yeah, 3 months, 12 sessions.
Oh, yeah. 10, 12 sessions. Yeah. It's, I mean, when you work on, when you work through the body and you work, you know, sort of powerfully through the body, and you also look at unraveling shame, as I mentioned, it's very, very powerful.
Right.
Very
right,
powerful
right.
work. I mean, you get and real transformation.
And it untangles a lot of things normally, right? It usually doesn't lead back to just one issue. It can lead back to several issues.
Yeah. Well, as it's sort of explained, shame is a neuro-emotional binder. So it happens when you're being shamed, and I don't know why this exactly happens, but it's an amplifier for your emotions and anybody else's emotion in the group or the one-on-one dynamic, however it's working. So let's say all of a sudden I shamed you, you know, when I said, oh, you know, really, you're wearing that, you know, horrible, you know, tie, Sam, you know, to do an interest, I don't know, something like that. Right. So you might feel badly yourself, but then you might also take on the aggression or the anger that you hear in my voice. Like that would be locked into that shame place. Right, you may not be acting it out because you're frozen and inhibited, but you would kind of be storing not only your own disempowerment and feeling badly, but maybe some of that aggression.
Right. Yeah.
So in processing, it's kind of like just like we have compressed files on a computer, you know, how you compress them and decompress them. This work is like the shame compresses everything together that we become very unaware of and unconscious of. And then the transformation when we're coming out of the wound and we transform the wound, there's an expanse, which that's where the skill comes in to manage that so that it happens slowly and manageably enough for the client so that the client isn't just completely overwhelmed with the experience. But coming out of that is the expansion and then being able to process and get rid of all of those feelings.
Right. Why do you think it's so important for especially therapists and practitioners to learn about this work?
Because we keep shaming our clients.
Oh.
I mean, with that inadvertently, you know, totally in a meaning well way, in an attempt, we just sort of talk to them about their shame, or they talk about their shame. They feel kind of exposed and naked about it, but we don't really give them any way to really process it or fully process it, so that, you know, they kind of sort of feel often, at least when they when I get people, they feel really hopeless. They feel like, you know, they've been let down in the therapeutic realm, and they feel often shamed because sometimes when we don't work on our own shame issues, you know, we can inadvertently be projecting shame on others.
Right, because we bring ourselves with us into
every session. We bring ourselves with us, fortunately and unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. So if people want to learn more about this work and contact you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Sure. If you want the PDF, then email me directly. My name is Karen, C-A-R-Y-N, at reembodylife.com, reembodylife.com. You can also just go to my website and read more about this. There's the Alchemy of Shame Transformation blog. There's a case study on there. There'll be more interviews on there. And that is reembodylife.com.
Yeah, that's reembodylife, R-E-hyphen.
E-M-B-O-D-Y-L-I-F-E.com. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. What do you find so gratifying about this work?
It's just amazing to see people bloom. I mean, I'm a gardener. I love to garden. And by cultivating worth, acceptance, belonging, respect, you just, I mean, I see people of all ages. I have a woman who's 70 years old and she's saying to me, the first time in my life, I feel like an authentic person.
Wow.
I feel like I'm speaking and living and doing things from who I am rather than the box that was made for me when I was, you know, however old, you know? So it's like, it's really moving. I mean, I could probably shed a tear over. I mean, it's incredibly gratifying work. It's challenging. It can be challenging. Hopefully the 10 milestones seem to really be helping people in this model, you know, practitioners to guide through, but it's a beautiful, beautiful gift that we can give and then receive the rewards in return. So,
wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Karen.
Oh, thank you.
Really
thank
appreciate you,
Sam. You
taking the time out of your busy schedule while you're here in New York. I mean, you're based out of California.
I am. I came in to present this model at the United Nations a couple of weeks ago,
and it was
very, very, very well received.
Ah, excellent. Yeah. Excellent. I'm so glad. You know, someone made a comment the other day, like, there are all these healing modalities and all this new stuff coming up now, and it's because there's a lot of work to be done.
And I think we're getting smarter, too. I think as society, we're evolving. So thanks again. Thanks for having me. Thanks to all your listeners for listening. And I look forward to seeing you again.
Yeah, we'll catch you next time you're in town. And everybody, of course, please stay tuned. Coming up next, our transformation specialist, Kevin Barbaro, track and field coach turned actor, talking all about what it takes to reinvent yourself midstream, mid-career, mid-life, and thrive while doing it. He's a wonderful example of how you can really change yourself regardless of the odds. So thank you all for listening. Please stay tuned for Kevin's show, Coffee Talk 3.0, and we will talk to you next week.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry. Be happy. In every life we have some trouble. But when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry. Be happy now.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Have you ever decided to reinvent yourself? Are you navigating a new life's journey? Are you an aspiring artist that's looking for direction? This is Kevin Barbaro, and my new show, Coffee Talk 3.0, is your new best friend. Tune in live to hear successful professional artists and their inspiring real-life adventures Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, right here at TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.